Hi, and welcome to TalkWord. I'm Marty Dundix, editor-in-chief of Weekly Humorous Magazine, and this is TalkWord, a fun little chat show where professionally funny people stop in to talk about cringeworthy, horrible stories that have happened to them throughout their lives. Today, my guest is Adam Mamawala. Well, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being on. Adam's a stand-up comic. You're a writer.
Mm-hmm.
You are a sports Cubs enthusiast.
Yes.
And you are now an actor.
Yeah. That's... Doesn't that make me sound like a douchebag, though?
No, you're a triple talented threat person.
It reminds me, somebody in L.A. used the term slasher, which I didn't know.
Slash, yeah.
I thought when I thought they were talking about like a horror movie thing, and they're like, no, like everyone in L.A. is a slasher, meaning like they're like, oh yeah, I'm an actor slash dancer slash model slash whatever, but actually they're just a barista.
Have you ever done anything slashy? You've been a pro the entire time because you've been a New York City.
Degree.
You've been a New York City comic since you were in college. You were a college comic,
yeah,
and then you migrated into professional comedy.
I mean, in the years, the few years like after college, before I started getting those college gigs, I was doing like odd jobs. Like I did like SAT tutoring.
And oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I did SAT tutoring. I worked at the mall. That's so embarrassing when you're because like I was, you know, I wasn't a genius, but I was like one of the smart kids. And then for people after college to like go shopping at our local mall and see me working retail there,
like local in New Jersey.
Yeah,
at like the Galleria,
at the Lucky Brand jeans store in.
Oh, is that where you
the Bridgewater Mall in New Jersey?
You weren't in one of those like kiosks.
No, no. I wasn't like selling like I wasn't in like a T-Mobile kiosk.
Yeah,
I was just. Selling jeans. So I did that, and then I taught tennis for a long time. So that was like how I made made money. Yeah,
tennis instructor.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
I was at one time PTR certified.
Really?
It doesn't really mean anything. It just means that you pay a bunch of money to go to like a weekend thing, and they.
Well, you have to be pretty good at tennis.
Yeah, no, I was good at tennis.
You had a good backhand.
Yeah.
So you did lessons. How many lessons would you have to do? Would this be? This is seasonal. Like this is like summer.
Yes and no, because there was an indoor tennis center in Princeton that I also taught at. So,
oh, cool.
I mean, it's good money, especially.
Is it like Royal Oaks? Did you see that show Royal Oaks on Amazon?
No. What is that?
It's kind of an 80s based show about a high school going into college, and he is a tennis pro at his like local snooty country club. In New Jersey.
That sounds great.
It sounds like this is actually a dramatization of your life.
That sounds amazing.
I think someone stole your life story.
There's too much TV, man.
There's a show about it.
Because 10 years ago, I definitely would have known about that show. But now there's so many that like something that directly appeals to me, I have no knowledge of.
It's a great show. Paul Reiser's in it.
Okay.
And then a bunch of young people I don't know. But it's definitely, at least the first season, it's very heavy on the country club tennis lessons thing. Did you ever get propositioned by an older cougar who you were giving lessons to?
No.
Because that seems like a stereotype.
No, it does. But I was in a web series where I played a tennis pro, and that was like the premise of it, was that I was like the...
Did they call it Royal Oaks?
They did not call it Royal Oaks. It
were you in this show and you just didn't know that they made
a show
out of it?
I don't know if they know that there's a show called Royal Oaks
or
how much overlap there is. But yeah, I played like a vaguely European... tennis instructor who's supposed to be like the hot tennis instructor,
yeah.
And then this older woman was coming on to me and we made out.
Do you do accents in your repertoire
a bit? Yeah
Oh, well, because you did impressions.
Well, the funny thing is when I auditioned for it, I had this like accent in mind that I did, and it like they thought it was funny and it worked, and then it wasn't until after the fact that I realized I was just doing an impression of Puss in Boots. Like it was just me doing Antonio Banderas basically.
Nice.
Yeah,
I love that Puss in Boots. Antonio Banderas, great actor.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Funny voice guy in cartoons.
Yeah.
So you were doing the comedy. You did the tennis instruction. Mm-hmm. How many summers did you tennis instruction, or how many seasons?
From the time that I was, because I like played in high school and college, or like on the club team in college, and then basically from senior year of high school until I was like 24, so like 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
All summer I would teach like. Full-time job, and then I do private lessons and stuff like that.
So while you were doing the college comedy touring,
mm-hmm.
you were also being a tennis instructor.
Yeah, because I would like make, you know, if I did 10, 15 college gigs, I would get like a little bit of money during the fall and the spring, but then in the summer I had no source of income,
right.
So I would teach tennis all summer.
That's interesting.
Yeah, there was like an interesting overlap there.
Yeah, definitely. It's always interesting to see what people's other jobs were, you know, like when you know, someone's doing acting or they're comedians mm-hmm. or they're writers. Like, well, you know, there's a time when there's nothing happening for them
right.
for a while. And then, you know, what were they doing? There's people have the craziest jobs. I think Tim Allen was like a drug dealer, right? Didn't he get himself in trouble?
I know he's a drug user. I don't know how much he dealt.
I think he dealt. I think there's a great mugshot of him someplace.
There is. Brian? I've actually seen that mugshot.
Yeah.
I always just heard he was like a cokehead.
Oh, well.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
You never know. Your album, One of the Good Ones, debuted at number one on iTunes in December.
It did.
Congratulations. Thank you. That's awesome.
Thanks.
I had a clip, so I was going to play a clip of this.
Yeah, do it.
And this is a track. We're only going to play a joke off the track, but this is a track called My Name is Atif.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to play the beginning of it.
I actually just saw that same casting director.
Like, oh, really?
An hour ago.
Yeah. Well, tell the story about My Name is Atif, because we're going to play the first joke off of this, but you can tell this story if you want.
Sure. Do you want me to tell it now, or do you want to play it first?
I'm going to play... Okay, I'll play the clip on this, and then we'll do the whole Atif thing live.
It's true, there's a lot of ups and downs in comedy until you get to a certain point. I'm not there yet. Like, you do good shows, you do bad shows. So last year, I go home, I do a terrible show, I'm very depressed. And then a couple weeks later, I get this email through my website about a potential gig opportunity. And I have a screenshot of the email I want to share with you guys. I think you'll get a kick out of this. This is what it said. Hello, we do a family time comedy show. It is completely clean and appropriate for all ages, teens to adult. No profanity at all and no sexual content at all. Christian event. Here's the best part. We book three comedians, all of which are of different ethnicity. Hold on, it gets better. We have a black and a white, and we are looking for a Latin or other ethnicity, which Adam fits. LOL. The LOL is in all caps, just kind of thrown in there, willy-nilly. Final question. What is his purse for 20 to 25 minutes of comedy? Guys, wish I had a funny end to that story, but I did that show last year. That's how hard comedy is. I am willing to overlook racism to work.
So that was fun. The great beginning of that. But the longer,
it's a good way to like get into the
bit. Longer part of that entire mm-hmm. bit is an audition process story that you had.
Yeah. So it was an audition for Madam Secretary, which I just auditioned for again.
You were just at.
I was literally just there.
You were just at Madam Secretary today.
Yeah. I never know if I should like talk about these things, but I don't know. Whatever. I can't imagine it would really get back.
I can't imagine that they're going to hear this.
No. I'm trying to
nice.
Think of a scenario in which they find out. Because even on the... I forget if I specifically said Madam Secretary when I did the bit on the album. I may have. But there was a part of me that was like, oh, should I not say the name? But I've just said it now anyway, so whatever. Anyway, it was an audition to play a terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a longer bit about what that was like and just how ridiculous the script was. But the best part of the experience was that on my way to that audition, I was stopped and had my bag searched in Penn Station.
So, you know, at least you're doing something
exactly.
right.
So it was like, you know, it's never good to be profiled, but I knew I was prepared for the audition.
Very prepared.
Right.
But you didn't get it.
No.
Because you weren't scary looking enough, probably.
Yeah. And that's, I have like an additional part of that joke that it's like, it's kind of a hard sell, so I haven't decided if I'm going to keep it. But one of the casting people said, like, I think you're probably too attractive to play a terrorist.
Which it's very is like, nice.
Yeah, that's like the nicest way to find out that you didn't get a job.
Yeah.
Like, that's just great.
It's a lovely rejection.
Yeah. No, I love that.
And then I was actually watching TV last night, and your Google commercial, commercial came on. So you do the voiceover for the... make Google do it.
Yeah, one of them. Yeah,
one of them. So there's a commercial on TV now. It's all about the new Google Assistant, and it's like scenarios of people and they don't want to do something, and their lives are actually much harder because they don't want to do it themselves. And it's all like ask Google to do it.
Right.
And your bit in the ad is the man trying to get the security code mm-hmm. in his house, and he keeps on getting it wrong. And I paid attention this time.
Could you hear? Did it
sound
like me?
Yeah. Yeah, it's you. So it's the guy's pushing the buttons, and What's the line that you... That none of the people are speaking, right?
No, so these are all it's all like voiceover actors.
It's all internal monologue type in your mind type thinking anyway. So it's the guys typing in the code, the alarm's going off, and you're... I think you say...
I say, of course I remember the code. It's 4452. And then he like... It's not working. You hear it in the beeping. It says like emergency.
It's getting worse and worse and worse.
4452.
But yeah, that was awesome. I was like, wow, that's a huge national commercial.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
That's going to run for... That'll take care of you for years.
To a degree. It was non-union. So there's some good, decent payouts, but it's not like if you got like a real, you know...
Brent.
I always think that when I see that, you know, like Jake from State Farm or whatever. That commercial's been on for 10 years. That guy must be loaded just off that one commercial.
Yeah. Probably.
But that would be ideal. I mean, if I could, not that commercial acting or voiceover is like the goal, but if I could be in a position where I get like national commercial a year, and then that helps me.
Like those guys, the two comedian improv dudes who are so funny.
Oh, the Sonic guys?
Yes, the Sonic guys. I always forget their names, but I see them everywhere on different TV shows.
Yeah, I don't know their names, but they're, I mean, just from those ads, they must have a fortune.
Oh, and then they brought in, there was another ad to accompany that ad, and they brought in two women improv comics.
Well, Ellie Kemper and Jane Krakowski.
Yes,
were in that one,
and they're big names.
Yeah, I mean, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, right. And Dirty Rock, and Office, and all that stuff.
Yes, Sonic. That's great. They make great commercials.
Sonic is some of the smartest marketing that has ever happened, because what they did was they bought ad space in all these places where Sonics didn't exist yet. And they created this buzz for themselves.
I did not know that.
Because it's not even that great. I don't know if you've been to Sonic, but I was
like
not...
It's like a fast food place, right?
Like the drinks are really good, and they've got good like shakes and stuff like that, but the food, in my opinion, is not good.
It's like a drive-in type.
But they created this thing, almost like when Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle came out, and people were going on these odysseys to White Castles.
Yeah.
It was the same thing where everyone in New Jersey saw all these Sonic ads, but they didn't exist. And then when they finally made one in Pennsylvania, everyone's like, oh, we got to go to Sonic.
Yeah. It's true.
It's pretty smart.
It's very smart. And their food, I mean, it just looks, you know, it's food you just eat in your car.
Yeah, I mean, I had a breakfast sandwich from there one time that tasted exactly like dish detergent. So I wouldn't recommend
At least
food,
you know they're using soap there.
Advertising-wise.
You know?
It's very good, yeah.
I went to your show. You do a lot of comedy in New York, and I went to one of your shows was at a bar in Brooklyn called Halyards on Friday.
Yeah.
That's a great show, 8:30, Bitches Brew.
Yep.
And then you had another show that you were doing, a storytelling show that happened on Saturday at UCB East.
Yeah.
And that was the one hosted by Andrew Collin?
Yeah, he was supposed to host it. He ended up not making it.
Oh, because he was doing a show with Nikki Glaser.
Yeah,
Nikki Glaser.
He was hosting for Nikki Glaser at Caroline. So
that's right.
Allison Leiby hosted that. I don't know if you know her at all.
How was the show?
It was fun. It wasn't like a packed crowd, but I mean, it's 11:30 on Saturday night, but it was cool. I mean, I don't have a lot of experience specifically doing storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like my style stand-up wise is kind of along those lines anyway, but
yeah.
I don't know. Storytelling is like a different animal to some degree, but it was fun. I mean, I use it as an opportunity to like work things out that I'm like, I know this is a compelling story, but I'm not sure if it's funny.
Right.
So
you'll find out if no one
laughs. And I think people give you more leeway in a storytelling format than...
Right.
Because I don't know, I'm very much of the mindset of like, if you're telling a long story, you have to punch it up the whole way.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily how storytelling is. So right. I feel this internal pressure to like make sure there's a laugh all the time.
I mean, all I do with storytelling is the key factor is lie a lot. You
I
know,
guess so.
You
or
just make
embellish at the
just
very least.
Make up stuff so it sounds a lot more fun.
Yeah.
It's probably
just
true.
in your own life.
Yeah, no, yeah, not in a storytelling show. Just you know, when I'm talking to strangers,
right.
I just make shit up. No,
yeah.
Not always.
You can.
I know I could. Absolutely. There's an interesting article that was in I think the New York Times today. There was a whole feature on I think it was on Jim Gaffigan, and I don't know who are your favorite comedians. Like who are as a stand-up comic, you see these guys who are successful, older. Mm-hmm. What style of comedy is kind of your style of comedy? You know, like who do you
question.
Look at?
I mean,
and you're
I think,
like, I model myself after this person or a mixture of these five people.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite comic was Mitch Hedberg, but I, you know, you've seen me perform. I don't think I like do a lot of his, I have occasional like short jokes like that, but I don't do a lot of one-liners in that way.
Yeah. He was all one-liners and kind of like oddity type thinking
and playing
with, you know, words.
Yeah. I mean, my first exposure to stand-up comedy was...
Isn't Mitch Hedberg's joke? I'm wrong. About escalators just becoming stairs.
Yeah.
Oh, that's one of the funniest.
Escalators temporarily stairs. Sorry for the convenience.
Sorry for the convenience.
We apologize
that's
for
right.
the fact that you can still get up there.
That's one of the. I guess that's one of his jokes that always sticks with me, and I think of that every time I'm in a mall. With
know,
a broken escalator,
yeah.
and I walk up it, I always think of that joke.
Well, that's what's so great about Hedberg is that it's almost like Seinfeld, where you can't not think about
right.
his jokes. Like,
right.
There's that one. There's the one about, anytime someone hands me a flyer, it's like they're saying, here, you throw this away. And especially when you're in New York, you think about that all the time. And
all
then
the
picketing one is amazing.
This
Do you remember
garbage.
That one?
No. Tell it.
It's a one line. It's probably, like, anytime somebody doesn't know about Hedberg, this is the example I give them. Which is, I'm against picketing, but I don't know how to show it.
That's good.
Yeah, he is incredible.
That's good. There was a lot of picketing this weekend for that
exactly.
March of Our
I
Lives.
I saw like little signs.
There were great signs. Yeah. There were so many great signs that people, I guess maybe I saw them on BuzzFeed or people were putting them all over Facebook and all over Twitter and Instagram. And the best one I saw, is it Esther Steinberg?
Mm-hmm.
The hilarious comedian. Okay,
yeah.
So she did one of the guaranteed delivery shows, so I met her, and she had posted it on Instagram, and it was a little boy holding up a sign that had a gun with a slash, like an anti-guns symbol.
Yeah.
And it said, I can't even bring peanut butter to school.
That's really funny.
It's like, you can't. You can't bring any food to school anymore. You can't bring anything that might possibly have, you know, gluten or peanuts or whatever. Like, we've become so obsessed with, like, banning everything from schools, yet we have this gigantic problem with people running around with AK-47s.
Well, unfortunately, the peanut butter lobby is not as powerful.
Not at all.
I wish it were.
Absolutely.
I would take handouts from Big Peanut Butter.
Everybody would. But, you know. I'm just now thinking of a peanut butter lobby, and everyone's like everyone can't speak because their mouth is stuck together
right.
with peanut butter, or they, you know, it's making dogs look like they're talking.
You can't do it anymore. People are too.
People get mad.
People
if you
are definitely afraid of peanuts.
I know they really are. I had a quite. Well, oh, so what I was getting at with the Jim Gaffigan thing, mm-hmm. there was an entire article about him not mentioning Trump. It's almost like he's Voldemort, where if you mention something political, it changes the entire show that you're doing.
I would agree with that.
You know, your stand-up. Because your stand-up doesn't seem to be political really at all. Like, there's some racial profiling jokes.
Yeah.
It's more about ethnicity. Mm-hmm. It's more about your personal identity struggles.
It's about that. I mean, I definitely, like if you were to listen to the whole album or, you know, depending on what set I'm doing, I certainly have opinions about things that are going on in the world right now, but I don't usually frame them from a political standpoint. It would be obvious to anybody watching the show that I'm more left-leaning based
exactly.
on like, the sorts of things that I'm saying.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't, in terms of Trump, it's not like I actively avoid talking about it, but I think there was this trend in comedy where after he got elected, especially in like the couple months after the election, everybody felt like they had to have some sort of take on it. And at a certain point, especially when you're in New York, like, I'm sorry, but you're not being brave by saying that you don't like Trump
right.
in a room in Brooklyn.
Exactly.
Like, also, everybody there doesn't like Trump.
Yeah, you're just going to get some cheers, I guess.
You're just, you know, it's this kind of preaching to the choir sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that people shouldn't do it, but I don't know. I don't know. Was Gaffigan saying that from the perspective of, like, alienating some of his crowd?
Yeah, I think
For him, it's a bigger deal because he does, you know, theaters and stadiums and stuff, and he doesn't want to eliminate half of his audience.
Exactly. I feel like... And also like a Seinfeld or mm-hmm. there's a lot of comedians who are appealing to a mass group.
Yeah.
And they do that by, and also these two, speaking of Seinfeld and Gaffigan, they don't curse either.
Right.
Really. You know, like they're not dirty. They're not political. They're just funny.
And which is
harder.
It would be weird to hear Seinfeld talk about politics or Gaffigan to talk about politics because they never have.
Right.
That's the difference. Like, if all of a sudden Patton Oswalt and Mark Maron didn't want to talk about Trump, that would be kind of jarring because it's like, this is what you've done. Whereas Gaffigan just always talks about food and Seinfeld talks about whatever, like, mundane observations.
It would be fun to somehow, maybe there's like a hidden camera somewhere
of
them going crazy on politics.
Yeah.
You know, like all of a sudden, randomly Seinfeld goes on Bill Maher and it just becomes like this, you know, profanity-laden, left crazy.
Right.
Or... profanity laden right wing crazy nut job. You're like, what just happened?
Well, I mean, they both are rich,
you know.
Yeah, who knows?
All about the taxes.
Do you know Tom Takkar? Do you know who that is?
Yeah, he was on one of the guaranteed delivery
shows.
Yeah,
he features
I kept on calling him Thacker.
Oh gosh. Well, he used to go by Tom Brady.
But then he had to change it.
Well, yeah, obviously.
That's because Kevin told me that. Kevin's like, you know, he changed his name. No, wait. Andrew Collin told me that. Mm-hmm. Andrew Collin was the host that show. And
the story about why he changed it is really funny.
Well, all Andrew said was, you know, he changed his name because of Tom Brady, the quarterback. And that's all he said. And I go, really? He changed it to this really hard to say name?
Right.
He goes, yeah. But is there more of a story to that?
Yeah, it's basically just, I mean, I'm just telling his story now, but it's...
sorry, Tom.
Yeah, he was... the reason I brought it up was because he does a bit about, like, dirty Seinfeld.
Oh, really?
Funny. Yeah, where he does, like, an impression of it. But
I'd love to see that.
Yeah, so basically the short version of him changing his name is that he did a show in Indianapolis at some, I don't know, Crackers or some comedy club out there.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they're Colts fans there. And so the guy bringing him up, this is when he's Tom Brady, intros him by saying, like, we all hate the Patriots, right? And the crowd's like, yeah. And he's like, who's the biggest bitch on the Patriots? And they're like, Tom Brady. He's like, well, this next guy... It's named Tom Brady, and he just walked out to people booing him before he had even...
Oh, that's terrible.
Started, yeah, so it's a funny story, but...
Oof.
But yeah, the dirty Seinfeld bit is really good.
That'd be fun to hear.
Yeah.
I will have to talk to him sometime. I had another question for you. Oh.
Okay.
Oh, I was talking, so you know all the sitcoms...
Yeah, you were asking... Well, no, go ahead.
Oh, well, I'm jumping around. What was I asking you before? I'm very scatterbrained.
No, that's fine. You were just asking, like, what comics I...
Oh yeah.
Pattern myself after, or
what comics do you pattern yourself after?
Well, I think I've like actively tried to not emulate somebody knowingly, because I think that's like sometimes people will say that to you as a compliment, or they think it's a compliment after show, like, oh, you really remind me of so and so, but then it's like, am I being original at all?
Yeah, it's so, like, oh, I know, because I'm totally copying that
right.
guy.
And I it's gotten to the point now where I have a hard time even watching stand up because I'm just around it so much that it's like an effort for me to sit down for an hour and watch a special, even if it's somebody who's like the best in the world at
it.
So, but I mean, growing up, my first exposure to stand-up was Dane Cook, the way it is for a lot of people my age. Like when Harmful If Swallowed came out, which I still defend as a really funny album, even though everybody...
He was a superstar. People forget. Like when I was...
He just blew up really... Like,
yeah. I mean,
in such a way that then there was such a demand for him to come up with new stuff so quickly that it naturally was going to get a little watered down. But yeah, he got gigantic.
So fast. Like he became like a... I mean, similar to how Eddie Murphy exploded into like a concert type, you know, the concert venues.
Yeah.
Where instead of just being like in a theater, it was like you were filling an arena. You know, like that's how Dane Cook was in late 90s.
Yeah, late 90s like into the 2000s. Yeah, like he was early like, to mid 2000s.
And he was doing, he was like going to a Billy Joel concert.
Yeah.
Pardon the obvious age that I just threw myself into where I'm
but I mean,
it's like being in a Billy Joel concert.
Doing stadiums, and he's like this icon.
Yeah.
He's always, at that point, he's like almost more of a performer than just a stand up.
Yeah, because he would almost not even tell a joke and people would go crazy.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It became a lot of like sound effects and flailing around the stage and stuff like that. But if you listen to that first album, it's really funny.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was very funny. I think people started hating him.
Well, I think part of that was the thing about him potentially stealing from Louis C.K.
Oh, that's right.
Part of it was comics just resenting how famous he was, which I guess...
That happens a lot, though, the comics, other stealing from other comics, or by accident stealing from other comics.
Right.
It seems like it's so hard to be as original as they used to be because of all the internet sharing.
You know, it's really hard.
With the Twitter and the Facebook, like people are constantly writing jokes about things that are happening, and you see so many jokes that... I mean, I feel like everyone's making the same joke about the same thing.
Especially if it's like a current event.
Yeah.
Like you're going to see a lot of tweets that are exactly the same.
Yeah.
Or a different, you know, some version of the same thought. But you can drive yourself crazy in that because sometimes I'll think of something like, oh, that would be a good tweet. And then I like Google it.
Yeah, never like, Google it.
Yeah, because...
It's like, oh, everyone made that joke.
Right. Yeah, and then I just feel like an asshole.
Or they I always look things up and I'm afraid someone's going to accuse me of plagiarism or whatever. Because, I mean, that's like a... It's like a scarlet letter in comedy. Like the second you get branded as like stealing someone's material, like you're done. You know, like done. Like what? Who was that? Fat Jew.
Oh yeah, Fat Jewish or Fat Jew
Jewish.
Or whatever,
He was just stealing everyone's stuff.
But that was actual stealing, where he's just reposting things that aren't his.
Yeah,
there's less of a gray area there than there is with somebody like doing a bit that's similar to someone else.
Yeah.
That was him quite literally lifting an image or
you
a
could
tweet.
See it. Yeah.
So that was ridiculous. Harder to defend. But yeah, so I mean, Dane Cook was like my first exposure to comedy, And I guess I think maybe early on there was a time where I was a little more expressive that was probably like a little bit along those lines, or even in terms of the construction of the jokes that I had when I was in college, but then got into a big Hedberg phase. And I mean, Chappelle's Show came out when I was like late high school into college. So mm-hmm. that, and then like that leading me to his stand-up, I feel like he's the person that I think about the most in terms of like a favorite comic, but I'm nothing like him.
No. I mean, you're not like a troll. I mean, you're a guy comedian who's just trying to make it in New York City. So yeah. I mean, you could be along the same. Was his starter career also in New York? I don't remember.
He started in D.C. when he was like 14. Oh, he was one of those like freaks of nature that, you know, was already an established comic by the time he's like 20 years old.
Those people are like unicorns. Those comics who start like when they're crazy young and they just... They're already good at telling jokes.
There's
in front
a dude
of a crowd.
In New York like that. Oh yeah, I was talking to you about Nico White.
Oh yeah, Nico White was on. Yeah, Friday.
Yeah,
he's funny.
I think he's 24, but he's been doing stand up in the city since he was like 15.
Yeah,
and he's great.
Yeah, he's young and incredibly confident.
Yeah.
And he
has something to say. He does. Which a lot of 24-year-olds do.
He doesn't just tell a joke. He tells like it's an entire set of setting you up into a place. Whatever the headspace was, all the different political issues he was like touching on, and he would like took you on a journey, and then you finally got to the end. I'm like, wow, this is a really developed comedy bit.
It is, and it was almost along the lines of like a Patrice O'Neill sort of thing. Where it's like I'm gonna make you believe something that you didn't believe when I started this bit.
Yeah, it was a lot more than just a punchline type thing. That was really impressive. Oh, and then who was the female comic in the very beginning of that show?
The host?
No. The host was Melissa.
Oh, Melissa Stokowski hosted Chanel Ali.
She was great.
Ali,
Chanel Ali.
Yeah.
She was really good.
Everybody's
I had never
good.
Seen her before,
she's,
too.
She's great.
Thank you for opening my eyes to all these new comedians.
No problem. There's a lot of them.
It was really exciting. We're going to do that, and then we're also going to go to Whiplash a lot together.
We should.
Because that's moving to Union Hall, which is near us.
Which is your backyard, basically.
Yeah. So that's going to be great. We'll get Kevin to come with us.
How can we ever... There's never going to be enough room for us to hang out in there. It's going to be packed.
The room is tiny.
Right. That's what I'm wondering. Like, because Whiplash...
Why didn't they do it at the Bell House?
I don't know. Because they pack UCB every week. So how are they going to have enough room in Union Hall? Unless they want it to be like that...
Like a smaller show.
Well, not even that. But like it becomes even cooler when there's so few seats that it's like...
It's going to be uncomfortably crowded.
Maybe they'll do standing room.
But then also, is it going to be... was the show Whiplash at UC, was that free?
Yeah.
But nothing at Union Hall is free.
Maybe this one will be, just because of the cachet of Whiplash.
Yeah, maybe. I hope so. Otherwise, it's going to be...
But people would pay $5 for it.
Easily.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure those tickets are already
sold out.
The amount
of celebrities that come in. Yeah.
Because I think they did pre-sales already, so they're probably gone already. Yeah. There's like 40 seats in that room.
Have you been
less.
To the new UCB, the one like all the way up there?
I have not.
I have not either.
I have heard that it's more like a theater.
Yeah,
like a play type theater, not like a
black
comedy
box
show.
Sort of thing. Or
that's what it sounds like. I haven't been there, but it's interesting that Whiplash is not going to be there, and they're moving to Union Hall. It makes me think that the theater isn't what people wanted it to be.
But that would be what I would infer. As
that's
well,
just me just speculating. Yeah. I haven't been, and I want to go. But man, that old UCB. I spent like my entire 20s just going to shows there and drinking PBRs and hanging out at the Gristides next door. And
of course.
It was amazing.
Well,
to
see all
show,
the people that came through there and are now doing
it was incredible.
Huge things.
So as a comedian who grew up in the age of comedians in sitcoms, did you dream of what would your sitcom be as a comic? If you could develop, if let's say ABC called you and they were like, we want to develop a show around your comedy, what would it be? Like, what would be the best way to encase yourself into a sitcom environment using your jokes?
It's a really good question.
Well, thank you
honestly,
very much.
No, it's something that I've thought about, of course, because...
I actually wrote that question down.
Hey, very good. Very nice.
Such a professional.
Well, it's one of those things where... Whenever somebody is going to ask me that question in the setting of like actually being in a room with people from ABC, I need to have an answer to it.
That's true. So this can be a practice for
me. Yeah, I think for me, the mixed race angle is probably what would be the most interesting and also something that there hasn't really been a lot of on TV that I'm aware of. Now, for all I know, there may be some Royal Oaks thing that involves a mixed race person.
No, there's nothing. They're all very white.
Yeah.
On Royal Oaks.
Yeah. So I think, you know, obviously you're seeing this trend towards having various groups represented.
Yeah.
Booth Joe's like, you know, Blackish or Fresh Off the Boat or even... you
know, I love Fresh Off the Boat.
I've heard it's great. I haven't really seen
it. Oh, you got to check
Black-ish
that out.
Blackish is really good.
Yeah, Blackish is great.
Yeah. But I think that idea of...
And Grown-ish, I saw a couple
Grown-ish
of...
Grown-ish is really good.
It's
really
so much
good.
Dirtier than Black-ish, yeah, though, because they're on Freeform, and they're kind of letting it, they're letting it hang. And there's a lot of adult themes. I mean,
there
it's
are.
College. So
but
it's
I think
more,
it's pretty...
It's great.
It's a pretty good depiction of what college is like.
Yeah,
certainly
absolutely.
Modern college.
Absolutely.
Imagine. And she's very good.
Yeah, she's great.
But yeah, in terms of a show that I would, you know, pitch or want to work on, the thing about being mixed race is that you kind of like fit in everywhere and nowhere simultaneously. And I think that is an interesting idea to explore. So
what would your profession be in this pretend sitcom?
I can't be a comic.
It's no, it's
yeah,
too easy.
It's overdone. I don't know. I mean, I think obviously the reason that comics write shows about comics is because that's what they know and that's what their life is. But
I'm going to put you in like an Applebee's or something.
Working in an Applebee's?
Sure. No, oh, maybe God. You own it.
Ugh.
Maybe you own a Sonic.
It's possible. I guess I would have to think about what my other...
Maybe it's like a computer company. Maybe you own like some kind of... how about this? Maybe you're like a mindless drone worker, a cubicle life type individual.
Yeah.
I could see you doing that. Like kind of like a...
Like
an office. Workaholics, maybe office space, like that kind of a... Kind of like a... You know, smart ass working for the man with his big dreams to do something else.
Yeah, like the funny guy at the office.
You could be the funny guy at the office, but you're not so zany, Adam.
No.
You're kind of reserved.
I suppose I am. Sometimes I feel like I let people down when they find out that I'm a comedian.
You really have to be funnier, Adam.
No, but sometimes when I'm introduced that way, it's like, oh, this is my friend Adam. He's a comedian.
Tell me a joke.
It's not
monkey.
Even that old, like cliche, like tell me a joke. But it's
clown.
Like, sometimes
dance
you'll
for
get
me.
That like, oh, I thought you would be funnier.
Yeah,
it's like I don't know. I'm sorry that I'm not like on all the time.
It's tough to manage people's expectations of someone who works in comedy.
What do you deal with that too?
Yeah, all the time. People are always like, "Tell me a joke." Or
and you're not even a stand-up, but people say
I'm not. People always say, "Say something funny," and I say something funny, and then I just walk away because that's kind of like I'm smart-assy. That was pretty funny. Don't ask me to tell you a joke again. You know,
yeah, it's
a great easy thing to say.
Yeah, it's not. It's not my favorite thing.
Or I say, if they say, "Say something funny," or "Tell me a joke," I go. Do me a favor, just go to weeklyhumorous.com, click on all the ads. There's lots of funny content there. And they're like, okay, fine. I just always just push the website.
I just never know what people think you're going to say when they, like, what do they think is going
to
happen?
People like knock-knock jokes, honestly. Just have a couple of knock-knock jokes ready to go all the time. Be like, so did you hear this one? Blah-bitty-blah-bitty-blah.
Terrible. That's how it would be.
She had head and shoulders.
At those NACA conferences, all those students would always be... asking you to tell them a joke.
Oh, yeah. Those are terrible. What else do you have coming up in the city? You got some shows?
I'm sure I do. What do I have? I'm going to be out of town this coming weekend, so I've got some shows in like the Northeast and New Hampshire and Maine.
Doing like a tour?
A little bit. My wife and I are just going up to Maine because that's where her parents live. So we're going up there for Easter. But
so you just turn any trip you just book some shows while you're doing it.
I used to always do that, and then it came to my attention that was a really annoying thing to do.
It's like so impersonal.
It really.
Your wife's like, "Oh, honey, we're gonna go to Maine and we're gonna visit my family." You're like, "That's great. I got four different jobs I'm gonna do while we do that."
Yeah. No, I used to do that like to a fault where there was no situation where I would be like, "Okay, we're just going on vacation." It would always be like, "Oh, can we go somewhere where I can also do spots?"
Yeah.
But I've now. This is an anomaly. I usually, like, we went to Nashville for our honeymoon, and there's a comedy club in Nashville, but I made no attempt to do a show while I was there. So I've gotten better.
Good for you.
Yeah. You have to let yourself just be a person sometimes.
It does help.
But I do have some shows in New Hampshire and Maine this coming weekend. And then New York-wise, I have this interesting that's coming up. I'm doing, they have this secret loft show that's supposed to be very fun.
Oh, cool.
It's kind of like a little... you know, they tell people where it is the day of, so it creates this mystique.
Oh, yeah. So you're going to be, you're performing at a secret show.
I guess I am, yeah. But if you look up, like, Secret Loft Show, it's...
Do you know where the location is?
I know, like, generally where the
But they don't even tell their performers where they're performing?
No, I'm sure they will before the show.
Okay.
I think it's near, like, 14th and 6th, like, that area. But yeah, nothing groundbreaking.
That's interesting. And then also the fact that you're going to different places like Maine not being a political comedian is actually good.
Because you can divide that audience pretty quick.
But I mean, you can just be more versatile. You know, you can be all over the place.
Yeah, but I sometimes feel like if you'd never talk about politics, then you're almost like chickening out.
Right.
Don't you feel that way?
I mean, if your stuff isn't necessarily political, then you don't have to be. But I mean, if you're going to be at a place that's super, super divided, it's only going to incite the crowd. And you don't need that as a comment.
Because especially if you do that, like if you're doing a longer set and you bring something up that's, you know, anti-Trump or whatever early on, you've created a situation where they're against you.
Right.
Which is not usually the ideal place to do comedy from.
Now, you have to tell me an awkward story, because this is Talkward. Okay. And I want to... Can I pick the story I want you to tell, because I know a bunch of your stuff now? Can you tell the story about the prom audition?
Oh, sure. Yeah, this just happened.
Okay.
I'm clean shaven right now, and it's also... That was the last time that I had to shave.
Yes.
So, this is maybe like a month ago. I had to shave because I had an audition for a David's Bridal commercial. So I'm doing the important work, and it was more specifically for a David's Bridal promposal commercial. And what that means is that the casting notice specifically said...
And promposal is the thing that the kids do now where they do these elaborate ways to ask the girl to
It's like
to
more
go.
Than you should do to propose to someone to get married, and people are doing it to ask somebody to prom.
Right.
So they'll, you know, do a flash mob or some crazy extravagant, you know, skydive and ask someone to go to prom with them.
It's insane.
So it was a promposal commercial, and the casting notice said, we're looking for people who look like they are 16 or 17, which you can't see my face right now, but I do not. And I reached out to the commercial agent and I was like, I don't really know what's going on here, but I'm going to look like a crazy person if I go in for this. Like, what do you want me to do? And he goes, well, they request your headshot, so just shave and go in there and you'll be fine. And so I shaved, and as it turns out, underneath my facial hair is still the face of a 30-year-old man. So that is not how shaving works.
No.
So I went into this audition, and everyone there just was 16.
Yeah.
Like, I was the only adult there with all of these 16-year-olds.
Wearing, like, a tux?
No, I wasn't wearing a tux.
So it's just the posing.
I was wearing something like what I'm wearing now. I was wearing like a blue button down and jeans or something like that, or whatever I thought would make me look young, whatever that may be. And so I had to go
baggy sweatpants and a backwards baseball cap.
And the promposal, it was like David's Bridal co-branded with MTV.
Oh,
so there was some sort of band that was involved in the promposal where I would say like, oh, my girlfriend like loves you guys, like loves this band. And could you help me do like a surprise promposal where you're performing? But I had no idea who the hell the band was.
Okay.
It was like a One Direction, but like probably like Shakespeare One Direction or, you know, some version of that. But yeah, I had to go into a room with she could not have been older than like 16.
And you must have felt so dirty.
It was just
because
not,
she knew you were
weird.
Old.
Yeah. I mean, I think when I shave, I maybe
was
could
she,
pass for like
was she like, so is your son coming?
No, I she
are you his dad?
Oh, God, yeah, it was awful. But I do have a joke about it now, or I'm like kind of telling the story on stage, and the way I ended is just saying like this is just one of those experiences where you really take a step back and ask yourself like what you're doing with your life, you know? Because I'm 30, and all of my friends from college have families and mortgages, and a couple weeks ago I spent my Tuesday afternoon pretend flirting with a child.
Yeah.
And that's not a good place to be.
It's not.
It felt like I was being set up by the police.
It's like To Catch a Predator.
It is.
You're
yeah.
waiting for, like, where's
yeah,
Chris
exactly.
Hansen?
He's going to walk in like...
burst through.
So, can you tell me what you're doing? Oh, well, I had this audition. Oh, you're here for an audition.
Oh. And he's doing the air quotes.
Yeah,
an audition.
Right.
Adam.
That
sure.
show was so crazy, man. I definitely got in some wormholes where I would just watch a lot of that.
Yeah, it's
and the
creepy.
Lengths that creepy people go to.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you drove from Minnesota to Florida to help her with her math homework? That's your story?
It's horrible.
Oh, God. So, yeah, but that's the world that I'm in right now. Sometimes, because I'm not used to that when you're coming out of stand-up.
No.
Like, obviously, you do terrible shows sometimes where you feel awful about your life, but at least it's more on your own terms. Whereas in this case, it really sometimes is being put in a room where they make you feel like such an idiot.
Yeah.
You have to like dance or, you know.
Yeah, I mean, well, you just came from a thing today from another Madam Secretary audition, and you want to? They're going to make you play a captain?
Well, I don't think I'll get it, but it was an audition to play a captain. I'm telling the thing that's hard about
so
those
the
auditions,
range you're doing right now. So you got called in to do to be a 16-year-old doing a promposal
a military
one day,
captain,
and then they ask you to be a military captain the next day.
I think somewhere in between
you
those
just,
age
man,
groups would be
the range. The range you can be a.
Well, actually, ironically, the military captain thing, I was actually promposing to the president. So it's, there is kind of an overlap there.
Madam Secretary, will you go to the prom with me?
Who's in Madam Secretary? Who's that actress?
Taya Leone.
Oh, right.
Taya Leone. Okay. I think she was David Duchovny's wife.
Mm, okay.
And then he was a sex addict.
Oh.
And then I think they had some problems.
Yeah, that sounds
so they
like
might be still together.
Problems.
I don't know if they're still together.
Those,
But I like that Taya Leone.
I don't know a lot about her. I guess she's
all good. I know about Taya Leone is she was the hot girl from Bad Boys, the movie with Will Smith and Martin Lawrence.
Of course, yeah.
And that's what I know about her. But I think she's funny and she's very good on Madam Secretary. My mom loves that show.
Of course she does. That's their demographic.
My mom loves CBS.
Yeah.
NCIS watches it. The new MacGyver. Wouldn't miss it.
Does she watch like Chicago Fire?
She doesn't watch this. She doesn't watch like the fire shows or like the emergency vehicle shows, but definitely Hawaii 50.
Oh boy.
Definitely the MacGyver, definitely NCIS, NCIS Los Angeles, NCIS New Orleans, which is just god awful.
Yeah.
Watches that. Gotta always watch. And then I watched so I can talk to her about stuff.
Oh, that's
Marty, did you watch the NCIS?
What a good son.
I did. I'm watching the NCIS right now. Can you believe, you know, what's happening with Ducky? I don't know. He's the medical examiner, Ducky. He's funny. But yeah, so I watch all this. I'm making fun of all these shows that I watch, but I watch all of them too.
Well, that's the thing though, is that like when you're starting out, obviously just as a performer, as somebody who's can be objective about things, you see TV shows or ads for new shows, you're like, God, that looks so bad. And yet I would totally be on it.
I would die to be on that show.
Well, I mean, that's how it works. So I think you have to hope that if and when you do get an opportunity to actually get cast in something, it's on something that people like. Because ultimately, that's the thing. It's like there are certain things that can help your career as a comic and certain things that would have no bearing on it at all.
Right.
Like if I were a lead on NCIS, I guess more people would know who I am. But I don't know if it would necessarily help my stand-up career.
Maybe. I mean, you know who they just added on NCIS was Fez from That 70s Show.
Oh.
And
Wilmer Valderrama?
Wilmer Valderramas. How do I say it?
I think you just said my last name. Valderrama.
Mamawala?
Valderrama.
Valderrama. I have some problems with my L's and R's.
Yeah.
So it's years in speech therapy, and this is how far I've gotten.
They added him to NCIS?
Yeah, he plays like an undercover brooding agent.
Well, he probably wanted some money.
Doesn't make any I mean, I just see Fez, you know?
Yeah. Oh, because, I mean, Freddie Prinze Jr. had like a pretty long arc on a season of 24.
Oh, I love
You never
20.
Know who. Oh,
I love 24. Yeah.
You never
and then they tried to reboot it without Kiefer, and it doesn't work. You need Kiefer.
Oh, yeah, but wasn't that the guy, Corey Hawkins, who played Dr. Dre in.
He's fine, but
no,
like,
he's good.
He wasn't a crazy person like Kiefer. Kiefer's nuts on that show.
He was great.
And
all the whisper yelling?
Yes. Damn it, Chloe!
Ugh.
Send it to my phone.
Comic. Marilyn Raskin.
She is a now that was a very interesting casting because she was really really good on 24. And then when you see her in funny roles, it's always so impressive.
Well, but her character on 24 was just her kind of like talking like Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah, she was always very awkward.
And Janine Garofalo was on that show for a while too.
She was, and she was very dramatic though.
Yeah, but I mean, it's one of those things where if I had to choose between like, do I want to be a lead on some like CBS drama? Or do I want to be like a small recurring role in Broad City? I would do the Broad City one because it's going to be more helpful to my career.
Yes, you would be well-known comedically much quicker
if
you were on Broad City. But if you wanted to have some sort of stability,
yeah,
you would probably do. Yeah, totally. I like that Broad City. I watched like four in a row
the other
day.
Yeah, it's really
funny. I love things that take place in Brooklyn. Or in Manhattan.
I think
like anything.
It's good no matter where you live. But if you live in New York, Broad City is definitely gonna. There are gonna be some little.
Well, it's fun to be like, oh, I go to that pizza place.
Right.
You know,
well, there's
a
whole
that.
Episode that they did on St. Mark's. Like the entire episode just took place on that little stretch of St. Mark's.
That's where I used to hang out. I also did. You? I don't know if you're an HBO watcher.
Yeah.
Did you watch Bored to Death at all?
No, I never did.
Man, that's good. It takes place in like Park Slope. And like Burham Hill.
That's like Galifianakis and Ted Danson.
Yeah.
Assessment. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a silly show. And I like murder mystery type thing. So it's kind of like a detective. And he's like an unlicensed private investigator. He advertises his services on Craigslist.
Okay.
And it's ridiculous. But Ted Danson is so funny.
He's great.
I mean, he's on The Good Place. Do you watch The Good Place?
No, my wife does.
I'm now just spiraling into TV. I'm sorry. I get on a topic and your wife watches The Good Place?
Yeah, she loves it.
She's a smart cookie. That's a great show.
I know. I've heard it's really good.
Very funny. What do you got coming up? Where are you in the city? Where can people see you? In person.
In person.
Adam, in person.
Well, if you go to my website, all the dates are there. So
The Mama Walla.
Yeah, adammamawalla.com /tour.
/tour.
Which is really just a fancy way of saying shows. I'm not like touring.
Do you update like on a weekly basis where you're going to be?
I update as soon as I have a show.
Really?
Yeah.
You're good at the business, I feel like.
I think knowing you
and meeting you a couple of times, you are very grounded and you're in the business of comedy. There's some people that they go up and they tell jokes and then they're kind of like a complete basket case of a person.
Right.
They're funny, but they just don't do the stuff.
Well,
it seems
to me that there are people like that who are like super funny comics but have no business acumen at all. There are people who are really good at the business side but just aren't very funny.
Yeah.
And then there are people who do both, and I would like to think I'm in that category. I don't know. I just feel like if you don't treat it like a job, how do you expect it to be a job?
And going up as often as you do, you're kind of like exercising it.
Yeah.
You know? You're honing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have stuff that's new material that you're working on now that's not ready, but you're working on it?
Yeah, of course.
Like a lot of stuff?
Yeah. Well, because so the album came out in December and I recorded it in June. So now that's, 9 months ago. And so obviously I'm not in a position where people know me to the degree where there's like a demand for me to have a new CD out or something like that.
We want new stuff.
Yeah.
We've heard this
it
already.
It would be wonderful if they did. But I did an album release show where I headlined the Stress Factory, which is my like home club in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that in December after the album had come out. And because of the fact that I knew that most people had just listened to the album, I put a lot of pressure on myself to be like, I'm going to have at least like 15 to 20 minutes of stuff that they haven't heard on the album, even if it's not like completely worked out yet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think I'm kind of, I just get bored if I'm doing the same stuff all the time.
Yeah.
So even if I have a bit that already works, I'll usually try to add like different tags to it or change it up or,
When you're up there, and I've seen people workshopping things before, when you're up there and something completely doesn't work, do you say, well, that didn't work?
Sometimes. I try not to do that too much. But yeah, I think it's weird if you don't acknowledge it at all. So I don't try to be overly self-deprecating, and I definitely don't do the thing of like, oh, like you guys should have laughed more at that joke.
Yeah, that makes an audience uncomfortable so quickly.
But I mean, one of the jokes I did when you saw me on Friday is one that like I know it's kind of a hard sell, but I'm still trying to work it out to a point where.
Which one?
The one about the women in the hospital waiting room having that like really offensive conversation.
Oh yeah, that was a tough build up.
Yeah,
that was a tough, because you had to create the scenario for the punchline to work,
right?
So you had to do all this work,
and you're basically without doing the bit. It's a scenario in which like essentially I do the right thing for the wrong reasons, I think would be the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
So it's a thing where you try to build up. Like, sometimes you earn your way into doing certain jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like about doing longer sets, which is not something that I get to do a lot in New York. But, like, if you're doing 20 or 30 minutes or an hour, you can strategically wait until 30 or 40 minutes in to do a bit that you know is going to be a tough sell. Because, theoretically, by that point, you've built up a rapport with the audience.
They like
you. They're going to go on whatever journey you take them on because they're on board. But when you have 8 minutes, that's harder to establish that. Because then if they don't know exactly where you're coming from, or if they think you're being like wrong-minded about something, then you don't have as much leeway.
It's interesting listening to you talk about it, and it's like a formula that you're doing, like the entire, like, well, I've got this much time to talk
like
to an audience.
Like the construction of a set?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, because I think I've learned that certain things. It's not even about credibility, but like, okay, so for example, I'm mixed race. My dad's Indian, my mom's white, but I look, especially clean shaven, I don't look like overly ethnic.
No.
Like, I could be Italian or something like that.
Right.
So it's usually important to me, if I want to talk about race to some degree, I feel that it's important to establish that I am not a white guy.
Yeah.
Because then it gives me more of a... I seem more justified in having an opinion on race.
Right.
Because a lot of times if you're a white guy who has got like a hot take on racial tension, people are like, who cares?
Exactly.
Which is not necessarily fair. But in my experience, if I have established that I am of mixed race, I can get away with more in terms of stretching it in what I talk about with race.
Mm-hmm.
And if I've established that I'm married,
mm-hmm.
I no longer come off as somebody who's, I don't even want to say threatening, but when you know somebody's single and there's always this element of like on stage trying to impress women or trying to, like, I think I become more like trustworthy somehow. I don't know.
It's the same thing as, you know, what women hitting on or feeling more comfortable around guys who were married.
Right.
Because like, well, at least one woman likes this guy. Enough.
That's really funny. Yeah, no, I guess it works like that. So, yeah, I mean, I try to think about all of that stuff without driving myself crazy.
That's good, if you can keep a balance.
Yeah.
Keep a balance. Do you have a traditional comedian notebook?
I don't. I used to
take
have,
the notes?
I used to have, like, little, like, pads that I would put in my pocket and I would write stuff down. I have completely converted to notes on my phone.
Just, like, dictation?
Dictation, or I usually don't write out the whole joke, like word for word, what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
It's whatever occurs to me or something that happens to me
mm-hmm.
that I'll just make a note of, and then I'll go to an open mic.
Has anything happened to you today?
No, I don't think anything's happened to me today.
Nothing terrible on the subway? No crazy homeless person?
There was a crazy homeless person, but...
but nothing funny about it?
Nothing
yeah, joke worthy?
No, it was just sad. Nothing.
It was just sad. Someone got stabbed. It was it was terrible.
No, but I think when you've done comedy long enough, your brain just works that way where, like, you know, everybody has weird and funny things happen to them on a pretty regular basis, but the average person just says, like, oh, well, that was a funny thing, and then they move on with their lives. But for me, you know, you're trying to...
Is that a bit? Can I make a bit out of this?
Well, yeah, and sometimes the reason that it's good to write stuff down is that sometimes you'll get, like, you know, 70% of the way with a joke, but you just can't figure out an ending to it. And then if you go back to it, you maybe are looking at it from a different perspective, or there's something else going on, like in the world, that gives you an ending to it.
Yeah.
Like a good example is the joke that I told on Friday about my wife. Like, you know, we have opposite schedules, so, you know, we'll sleep with each other like once a week on the weekends. And this was something that had happened, like, you know, probably a year and a half ago, where I was working on this bit where she had suggested, like, oh, like when you come home, like you should kind of like sneak in and like we'll fool around then, like, you know, like sneak into bed and blah blah blah.
Yeah,
it'll be hot. And I
while
could never,
she's sleeping.
Yeah, right. And I could never really figure out an ending to it. But now, just because of the what's going on in the world,
right,
it's kind of created the end of the joke where I say, like, I love you so much for suggesting that, but I'm gonna have to have that in writing because there's just no way. There's no way I'm doing that.
I want it in writing.
Yeah.
All right.
So, but I mean, what's going on in the world wrote the end of that joke because I couldn't quite figure out what angle I wanted to.
That's fun. So it took like a year to make an entire punchline.
Yeah. Sometimes you just get sick of something that's not working quite as well as you want and you just like screw it and then you have to come back to it later.
Now you're an avid Cubs fan.
Huge Cubs fan.
Want to plug your new podcast.
Yeah, let's
called
do that.
Away Games.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a Cubs, exclusively a Cubs baseball podcast that you host with Kevin McCaffrey, another comic. And what is this podcast about?
So the podcast it's about the goings-on of the Cubs. It's called Away Games because our avid Cubs fans who do not live in Chicago. So our experience for most of our lives has been seeing the Cubs in different stadiums that are not Wrigley Field. And it's called Away Games. It's Away Games Pod on Twitter and Instagram. But it's one of those things where there's so many podcasts that you kind of have to at least try to be specific, I think.
Everything has to be a niche.
Yeah, so I spend so much time...
I have a second podcast, and it's just about tomatoes.
Oh, and that's that might not even be specific enough. You gotta talk about... Are we talking like beefsteak? Are we talking plum tomatoes?
Oh, no.
Because I don't... Yeah,
that's why no one listens to it.
And, I mean, there's already that big like cherry tomato podcast, so you might be... you know, people are kind of locked in with that already.
That's why people kept throwing them at me.
I know. But that's what you want when you do a live tomato podcast, is for people to throw them on stage. But I'm really excited about it because I spent so much time talking about the Cubs with Kevin and our other friends anyway.
Yeah.
Like, why the hell not put it on a microphone and see if people listen to it?
And this is every week?
It's every Wednesday.
That's exciting. So you have to hang out with Kevin every week?
I know. It's really
a
bummer.
What a pain.
I wish I still lived in Astoria. He and I were actual neighbors, and now I live in Bay Ridge, which is the other side of the world as far as New York is concerned. But
it is. So you have the Away Games podcast. You have some comedy coming up at adammamawala.com.
Yeah.
This has been awesome. Thank you so much for coming on.
Of course.
I appreciate it. So this is Talkward. I'm Marty Dundix, editor-in-chief of Weekly Humorous Magazine. Please check us out at weeklyhumorous.com. Sign up for our weekly email blast, which is every Friday. Talkward is distributed by Humorist Media. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.